TCL is a proud sponsor of the Score North Studios. Enjoy more of the things you love with TCL. These two guys have Minnesota sports flowing in their veins. Mackie and Judd on Score North and ScoreNorth.com.
And actually, while these two guys do have Minnesota sports flowing in their veins, it's not Mackie and Judd. It is Zolgad and Star Tribune sports columnist Chip Scoggins. What's up, Chip?
How are you doing, man? Yesterday was very Minnesota sports-like, Judley.
You know what's so funny about that? You know what's... I couldn't be happier in this sense. At least it's back. Like, at least it felt... It felt like, to your point, a normal Minnesota sports day. You know, disappointment, sure, but at least people are playing games again. At least the Twins and the Wild and the Loons, you know? I mean... For 4 months, we sat there basically twiddling our thumbs, right, with nothing. Mm-hmm. And I think any one of us who is a sports fan in this town would have given anything to see the Twins lose in nine or the Wild get blanked. It's back. I can't take that part for granted because when it wasn't there, it stunk.
It's nice to be able to argue and be mad about sports and not other things, right?
Amen,
not,
brother.
So yeah, it was. It feels like everything. It feels like we went from 0 to 100, Judd, with all the sports that have come back. And you know, normally August we're just football, right? And so
yes,
it's been interesting trying to keep up with all the different teams in town that are. We knew that this was, you know, if they came back, it was going to be like that.
Mm-hmm.
That everything was going to come back at once. And so yeah, it was a. It's been kind of crazy trying to keep track of everything.
What is your thought here? And I actually want to start you off with a team that's not playing yet. I believe they're supposed to start training camp today. Gopher football.
Mm-hmm.
What was your thought on Rashad Bateman? And then I saw the kid from Purdue, receiver as well, who I think was the only player that was considered at that position to be as good or possibly a little bit better than Bateman, both opting out. Because I don't blame them. But do you think that we are going to have these seasons? And if we do, what does it take away when we see marquee players from the Big Ten and I'm sure elsewhere deciding to opt out?
Yeah, I was not surprised with Bateman. We saw not the first player, but the first big player was the quarterback from Virginia Tech that came out was it last week or 2 weeks ago and opted out. And then you've seen three Big Ten players, three of the best players of Parsons too, opting out. It doesn't surprise me. We were talking about this. If football got pushed to the spring, that you would see a lot of the potential first round guys not playing if the season was in spring. But there's just been so much conversation with a lot of the players from different conferences voicing their concerns about safety protocols. And we saw with the Big Ten, they had over, 100 players, or was it 1,000 players. Pac-12 players came out with a thing on the Players Tribune voicing their concerns and demands that they wanted to see. So there's been a lot of conversations about just players being concerned. So it didn't surprise me with Bateman, and it won't surprise me. I think we'll see more probably.
Yep.
Maybe not big names, but just guys that just don't feel comfortable if they have underlying conditions or they just don't feel comfortable with the testing or whatever. I think you'll see more kids opt out. Will we have a season? I think last time I put it at 50-50.
Yes.
I think I'll keep it there. I think, let's be honest, Judd, this is about money.
Yes.
Right. These schools
Everything
absolutely
is.
Need the money. And so I think they're going to give it their best effort. And I do think that, you know, these conferences, I think the Big Ten, they want them tested twice a week. Is that right? Part of the protocol that just came out this week. And so I think they're going to do everything they can to create a safe environment. But I would be curious to see what those practices look like because they're not going to put on pads and start hitting and tackling right away. I don't foresee that. So is it mostly walkthrough stuff initially, but at some point, if you're really going to play a game, Judge, you are going to have to you are going to put on pads and you are going to have to tackle. So it'll be interesting to see how they handle that.
Well, and the schedule that got released this week, I believe, has them starting on something like September the 5th, which is a month from now, and they haven't practiced yet. And I don't know how you get there that quickly. It just seems like they released a schedule that they almost know that they can't execute the way it's been released. And I guess my question is, did they do that because they know now that with bye weeks, and I think there's two for the Gophers, that there's time to push games back? Or did they do that almost because they know they're not going to play, but they want to have a schedule just to make it look like they might play? And I don't know what the answer to that question is.
Yeah, and part of that release, Kevin Warren said, you know, this is a schedule, but we were retaining the, you know, the right that if this doesn't get better, we don't, if it's not safe, we're not going to play games. That they, you know, there's a chance that they could still cancel the season. And you're right. I mean, if you have to spend the first, let's say, 2 weeks just doing walkthroughs in small groups, I mean, how are you going to get ready for a season?
You're not.
I mean, and so, I don't know, Judd. I mean, it you know, it seems like it's rushed, and I think it was just to put something out to, you know, because you don't want to be caught, you know, if it doesn't prove and you feel like you can play, you got to give them something, some timeline. There has to be a timeline here, you know, of when you might have a game, but I think they'll revisit it week by week. And if it's, you know, 2 weeks down the road, if they're really not practicing, I don't think it's feasible that you're going to start that season on September 5th.
On Bateman, I completely get and applaud his decision. Okay. It makes perfect sense. That being said, that does not lessen my disappointment as a college football fan who watches the Gophers a ton, because I think that among skill positions that I've seen in this program since I started watching the Gophers in 1978, Chip, I think that this was one of the most special players as far as his abilities. I mean, he to me was not a nice player. He to me is a first round pick, probably in the top 15, who has a skill set that we simply, for the most part, don't see here from Gopher football players. So I totally get his decision. I have no a bone to pick with what he's doing. But that doesn't stop me from being incredibly disappointed that we don't get to see what would have been his last year here. Because, man, as far as this program goes, it would have been so much fun to watch.
Yeah, and I completely agree. And I think most fans understand that it's okay to be disappointed not to get to watch him play, but also support that he's doing the right thing for him and his family. I mean, I don't think anybody's going to begrudge him, you know, for not playing. But yeah, it's disappointing because he's a special player. And, you know, I started covering this team closely in 2003 until now. And the two best players that I put in their own category are him and Maroney.
Sure.
Those two were just different. You know, I don't know other way to say it, but they were just a different level of player, athlete, explosiveness. They were those two. When you put the ball in their hands, you felt like there's something special is going to happen, or they could take it the distance. Whereas I just haven't seen that in any other players that they've had. And so I you know, he's going to be a first round pick, whether it's top 10 or whatever. I would assume he's going to be one of the first two receivers taken. And so, yeah, it's disappointment. It's disappointing because you like watching great players play. And so, but I also completely understand where he's coming from, and that you don't want to jeopardize, you know, a first round money that you're going to get guaranteed.
Exactly. On the Twins, sir, I'm a little bit conflicted here, not because they're not a very good baseball team, because they are a really good team. I'm a little bit conflicted here by this simple point, though. They have been given a 60-game schedule that is mostly a gift, and by that I mean they just played four games against the Pirates, who are who are probably at the, just being kind, a Triple A team.
Yeah, they're terrible.
They're now going to Kansas City for three. Terrible team. Detroit's gotten off to a decent start, but, you know, I don't think Detroit is certainly in the Twins class. My point being is, how do we weigh a very quick, short baseball season/schedule when you have a team like the Twins who look to be damn good? But you, for the most part, aside from what, maybe the Cubs or so, you're not, until the playoffs start, you're not really going to get a chance to judge how good, because there's not that trip to the Bronx. There's not, you know, there aren't those games where you sit down and say, this game's appointment TV to see where this team is truly at. Because I know they're good, but now they're playing a really good team themselves. How do you weigh that one?
Yeah, it's, and let's be honest, you know, a lot of their guys have gotten off to slow starts. You really haven't got a lot from Donaldson, and he's injured now.
Yep.
Sano got off to a slow start, even though he's hitting some home runs here lately. You know, so they're not exactly crushing the ball in that first weekend they did in Chicago. But, yeah, it's – but we thought that, right, Judd, that this team – we knew they were a good team that could win their division. But ultimately, they're going to be judged on what they do in the playoffs.
Yes.
And will we know? Are they going to come in after 60 games? Would you say battle-tested? I wouldn't say that. You know, so it's going to be – yeah, that's where we're going to find out. I think it's fair to say they're a good team, but we're going to find out in the playoffs how good. And without those head-to-heads with the Yankees,
yeah,
you don't really know. But even in saying that, Judd, last year, you know, the Yankee series, you know, that was a fun series that was here. And
true,
I guess you always want those kind of barometer series, you know, to match up to see where you're at, but it's a different thing when you get to the postseason. And
it's just that the Royals and Pirates give me nothing. Like, I can't tell a thing. The Pirates had a few days, their lineup, Chip, and I'm not being a smartass here, they had probably eight guys who I hadn't heard of.
Yeah,
like I didn't know their first names until I saw the scorecard.
Yeah, I was the same way. Like looking at, like, I've never heard of any of these guys, and I mean they're clearly in a different spot, but I think, you know, there are parts of this team that you can say you think will hold up. Now, yesterday was not obviously ideal for the bullpen, but that bullpen's good, right? I mean that's a really good bullpen.
Amen.
The lineup, I still think I would put it out there, and you know they're going to score, but I still have, you know, with the starting rotation, Judd, I still have questions, and I don't know that anything is going to be answered in this regular season. Do you?
No, probably not. And
health.
I'm with you on questions though. Like Rich Hill.
Yeah.
Is Rich Hill really hurt right now, or is he an 40-year-old pitcher who you know exactly what you're going to get from? And you really don't need him a lot in these 60 games, and so you're going to try and get him to the back end of the season and then pitch him more, or is he going to break down here in 3 weeks, right?
Yeah.
So I'm with you.
Yeah, I mean, there's just a lot of and I think it's fair to say with Berríos too. Like what is,
oh yeah,
is he going to take a step or is he not? And if he does, if he does have it pulled together and has a strong here regular season, is that going to translate to the postseason? I don't know. You know, so the rotation to me is still where all the questions are. I feel confident about the lineup, feel confident about the bullpen, but I'm not sure we're going to really know a whole lot other than our guys healthy. Hill, Homer Bailey, these guys, are they healthy? Now, I think that's what you're going to, and Oda Rizzi too, with his back. I think that's really the only thing you're going to be able to answer, because we got to see him against these big, the tough lineups, and we're not going to see that a lot here.
When do you think that it's going to be fair? And I think we're very close, but in your mind, when can we accurately make a definitive statement, pound the table, and write it in ink on who Berríos is? Because, I'm the one who keeps saying, yeah,
but he's not young. He's not young.
That's what I was going to say. And I keep saying, I think he can be a true ace, but I've said it 1,000 times now, and I'm starting to hear myself and think it might be time to just say he's a good pitcher. He can be effective, but he's not a true ace. So I think at some point here, very, very soon, Chipper, to what you're saying, we're going to just have to pass that judgment and maybe accept the fact that he's never going to get into, let's say, that top 10 or top 8 of guys that are considered clear-cut true ace pitchers in baseball.
Well, that's the thing. Like, how are we defining ace? Are you saying Scherzer ace?
Yeah, I'm saying Verlander. I'm saying Scherzer. I'm saying in the regular season, Kershaw, not the playoffs. Yes. Yeah. I'm saying where you can say you're going into the playoffs and Berríos is going to start game one, not because he's the Twins' best pitcher, but because he's one of the best pitchers in all of baseball. We're not there yet, and I'm beginning to think we're not going to get there.
Yeah, to me, that guy is, okay, game one starting, we're winning because we got
correct.
That guy on it. You know,
yes,
like, sure, we're winning that one because we got him. I don't think he'll get there, Judd. I don't. And that's, you know, very few guys get there, so I'm not sure that's a knock on him. I think he's, if you're hoping he's going to be that, I don't think he'll get there. But I think he can be a very good number two. If you're a World Series team, is he your number one? You better have really good two, three. You know what I'm saying?
Yes.
Your whole lineup better be, or your whole rotation better be at a certain level. And so I don't know. I just don't think he's going to get to where you say he's one of the top five pitchers in baseball. I really don't.
I think you're probably right.
Not right now, yeah.
Unfortunately, the Donaldson calf problem scares me. He has had a lot of calf problems. I believe it started in about 2017. He put on Instagram after he got the National League Comeback Player of the Year award for last year with Atlanta. During the homestand, he put on Instagram that I believe he has had a torn calf either right or left seven times. Yeah. This is to me potentially a big deal because this is the one thing with him you can't toy with.
Mm-hmm.
And Chipper, if my options are I can get him back and he can contribute, but I'm taking some chances, or I'm going to be as safe as possible in a 60 game season when I know my team is good and I've just signed this guy at the age of what, 35, is that right?
35, yeah.
To a 4-year contract. And I think the Twins would go in this direction, but I am definitely going to err on the side of caution here, because mm-hmm. what I don't want him to do is try and get back out there, rip that thing, be out for the season, have it be a problem into next March or April. This is the one thing about that contract that I guess I didn't think about at the time, but legitimately does scare me.
Yeah, and the thing that makes you nervous, Judd, is... Did he do it running out of ball? Or I don't think.
I think he might have done it coming into field. I think it might have been partially he tweaked it coming into field the ball during that game last Friday against Cleveland at Target Field.
But nothing that jumped out. So it was nothing that was routine.
Correct.
Right. It's not like he ran into a wall or had a collision or or whatever. It was a routine play, and he had this setback, and so. Well, we know their MO is to err on the side of caution with guys, right? I mean, it's just how they do it. And so, this is not a guy that you sign to a 1-year deal. And, you know, not that you would maybe treat him any differently, but you have a lot of money tied up, a lot of years tied up in this guy. And so you're good enough to win your division without him. And so I think it's going to be a slow play on him. You know, this is not something, given his history, this is not something you rush him back on. And so, but to me, that's the biggest concern is like, there was nothing that jumped out as like, oh man, that was, you know, I could see where he did. There was just, like you said, coming in on a play or whatever that caused it to happen. And so I would say that's, you know, definitely a concern that something routine caused this, you know, this setback.
The Wild. The Wild.
You score. It looks like the same old Wild, right? You got to score, Judd.
You know, you don't only have to score, but you got to score. You can pick, okay?
Yeah.
Really good power play or really good 5-on-5. When you've gone three games, and I know that they won game one, but when you've gone three games against the Canucks and they're down 2-1 going into, as we record this on Friday, they're going to play game four and potentially get ousted on Friday night. When you have played three games today, Chip Scoggins, and 5-on-5, you have zero goals. And in the last two games, I believe it's 13 power plays and no goals. Yeah, the one thing that I like about this is it does give Bill Guerin a final chance to see, let's say, 4 or 5 games. And basically probably confirm suspicions. And so if I'm Guerin, I'm pleased about the fact that I get to see this. But to your point, yeah, they have reverted to form in some cases to who they probably are. Although the one confirmation that we have gotten in these three games, Kevin Fiala is an emerging star, if not a star. And that's the one good thing is, because I think a lot of folks said, well, he got hot, but let's see if that continues. His skill set is special. But besides that, yeah, there's a lot of things that probably need to be thought about and or tweaked in the coming months once they're done.
Yeah, and after that game one, I was thinking, you know, this feels different in from Wild's playoff series of years past because they finally have a guy that can finish. And that was always the frustrating thing, you know, of recent years is the Wild would always pat themselves on the back about how many chances they got, and they score one goal. It's like, I don't care about chances. Score! You know, I mean, the chances are great, and I know that's indicative of your creating things, but you got to have finishers. And so I feel like, you know, Fiala is a finisher, even though he's, you know, he hasn't, you know, getting the other day. But you're right. This gives Garen real insight into what this team is and what they where they're lacking and you know, changes that have to be made. And so it still comes out, you know, I know they were a high scoring team under for a short sample size after the coaching change, but they still need more. They still need more high end talent. And obviously you have it coming with the Russian
Kaprizov.
But you still need to add some firepower to it. But you know, in this series, not only that scoring, you got to stay on the penalty box.
These bleeping officials, man, have been told to call because the Canucks are doing the same exact thing. My conspiracy theory is that the league said when we come back, we want goals and offenses might be a bit rusty chipper. So I think what the league said, because if you watch these games across the board, they are calling every stick and they are looking, they are salivating. If you slash a guy even slightly, it's going to be a penalty. So I do
they
think
want power play goals.
They want power play goals. Exactly right. The ice is bad. And these teams didn't have a huge training camp, so I think they probably thought that the offenses might be rusty. And so they said, how can we get as many goals as possible? But to what you said, and you're right, you know, okay, so in the past two games, if you are going to be given 13 opportunities on the power play, you can't be 0 for 13. You got to score at least once or twice.
Yeah, and it's, well, that's the same old, you know, that's the Wild MO2, the power play. And so, yeah, they need somebody to step up here. I mean, it's got to be – they can't just wait on Fiala and hope that he can score a couple goals and do it by himself. I mean, they've got to get some production, you know, from their depth guys. And do we know anything on Suter?
No, he left in the third period of Game 3. He didn't come back. I guess he went to the dressing room, which is not good. Yeah. But now, if he doesn't play in Game 4, they can simply announce that he is the new term unfit to play. So you don't know if he broke his ankle or broke his arm or has something wrong. We're not even going to get from the league now the decency of upper body. We're just going to be told unfit to play. But my guess is if he left that game, he might try and play, but it's going to be a struggle.
Well, especially since it's a back-to-back, it's not, you don't have a whole lot of treatment time in there. So,
right.
I mean, obviously that's, you know, that's a blow. It's funny. That's probably the disappointment thing because Judd, I don't know if you ever play a perfect game, but they played darn near perfect in game one. And you thought, man, maybe they're a better team here. You know, maybe they can win this series. You know, I'm not saying they're going to lose it, but the last two games have taken the wind out of your sails because they just can't, they just can't generate any kind of offense.
12.5% Chip Scoggins, 12.5% chance in the lottery two at that first overall pick. That's what
I know.
That's the statistic I'm looking at tonight, my good man. 12.5%.
So you'd rather have the 12.5 than win a series?
Oh, absolutely. They're not going anywhere. Oh, if they get past the Canucks, they're going to get bounced instantly. No. Give me the 12.5% chance at the Lafreniere kid. I mean, can you imagine if you have
him and Kaprizov?
Yeah, and Fiala?
Yeah.
Like, this team hasn't had that. That's an embarrassment of riches for any team, and this poor team has not had a guy, as we've discussed before, as good as Fiala since Gabrick. So if you're gonna, if Kaprizov is who we think he's going to be, and Fiala, I think, has basically said, "No, I'm this good," and then you win the lottery, which I obviously, with this being a Minnesota team, don't think is going to happen. But let's say it did. Can you imagine the firepower that this team would suddenly have, which it's never had before or even close?
So, Judd, let's assume they don't, and fans are allowed in next year. Just to see, so we're calling Kaprizov. How do you? It's not Kaprizov.
Kaprizov is the pronunciation I saw now.
Kaprizov. That building sold out, right? Game one, if fans are allowed out or back to normal next year because of him.
You know, ordinarily I would say yes, but here's the thing: with people probably, and I'll defend fans here. With people having to make financial decisions based on what has transpired with the pandemic, Chip.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not sure about that now because the interest in that team pre-break was basically, or not basically, it was as low as it's been since the year before they got Zach and Ryan.
And now
with people probably, and companies as well, having to drop things like season tickets.
Mm-hmm.
Ordinarily, I would say Kaprizov sells the building out opening night next year. Sure. And that might be the case on opening night. But do people have the disposable income to invest like they once did? I don't know. Yeah. That's why I think the Wolves are in just a world of hurt, because interest in that team pre-pandemic was, you know, I think spiking up a little bit because of the big trades.
Mm-hmm.
But my God, they're going to come back to what? They're going to come back to people who say, I might be able to go to Vikings games. Right?
Yeah.
Like if if I can get into games, my money's probably going to go Vikings. I would say Twins now because the Twins are good. Wild Wolves for sure, and go for like basketball. I am really curious to see where the potential disposable income goes on ticket purchases for those teams.
Yeah. And I, you know, let's say they start up in December. Is that for like the NHL? That's the working theory.
Yes,
right?
Sir.
And who knows what kind of restrictions we're going to have then. I mean, it still may be no fan. I mean, who knows? But I don't know if it'll be, all right, full capacity, everybody come on. You know, I don't think we're going to be in that spot either. But, it's going to be interesting because of the way the economy is and people have lost jobs and just don't have the disposable income. But, you know, the Wild, if you know, I think there will be definitely interest. Because you know you want to come see this phenom play, but it's going to be hard for these teams, Judd, to get fans back in. I mean, it's just not going to be the same. Even if you're allowed to have your full capacity, which who knows when that's going to happen? It's going to be hard for it's going to be hard to sell tickets because it already was hard before because of the just how expensive everything was, and now you add all the lost jobs that have happened, and it's going to be a real challenge for these teams.
Tickets and jerseys and all that, you know, the stuff that had become such a common thing, but I'm sure for folks was a luxury, is now going to become a decision to make. And are you going to buy your 97 Kaprizov, jersey that costs, I don't know, $200?
Yeah.
So
I mean, it's
going to be tough.
Yeah. I don't know. And, have we heard on the Vikings attendance?
No.
What are they going to allow? Is that
we've not heard? I saw that the Packers have basically acknowledged, I think, they're not going to have fans in Lambeau for the first couple games of the season.
At least. Yeah.
I have not seen a thing yet. And my question that I have on the Vikings too is: are they going to be impacted by the fact that we're talking about putting people in an indoor stadium? And I think we all accept now that the virus itself spreads more indoors than outdoors. And so is that going to impact how many people they allow because it's not an outdoor stadium? I mean, there's a lot of things here, but I would guess that the first, at least couple, if not the first four home games for the Vikings are probably going to be played with almost no fans, fans.
Yeah, I would. If they stay on schedule, if they start, on time, it just seems hard to think that they're going to be in position to allow fans indoors. And, you know, all these sports are strange watching them live, Judd. I mean, the baseball thing takes some getting used to. Football would definitely, just the hearing the pads and the tackles, that would be.
Hockey's been fine.
Yeah.
Because it moves so fast, and I'm not looking in the stands. I have not, it took me almost no time to adjust to watching hockey played with no fans. Baseball's a little bit more odd because you're constantly seeing shots of empty seats.
Yeah.
But
the basketball's been fine too. The NBA, okay. It's been fine. Yeah, it hasn't been jarring, I wouldn't say. I mean, maybe it's the same principle as hockey, is just because it moves so fast.
Yep.
That you're focused on that more than crowd shots, but baseball, you're 100% where there's so many, you know, foul balls and stuff like that you just notice it a lot more.
Last thing, sir, Vikings training camp, which has started, but they haven't started on the field yet, but they're doing walkthroughs and blah, blah, blah.
Mm-hmm.
I got a two-pronged Vikings question for you. How much do you think we know about what they're doing? Because right now our access is based on things like Zoom calls, but I'm going to spin that question off to this one. How much do you even think the Vikings, and this does not just go for them, this goes for teams around the league, how much do you think that the Vikings know what they are doing or plan to do based on the fact that, you know, ordinarily by now you're practicing, the coaching staff is watching film of that practice, you're going to play preseason games. The unknowns in football to me and the inability to probably hold real competitions is going to muck this thing up a lot. And it's going to make it very difficult for the public, which is not as important, and us, to make decisions. But I think it's going to make it really difficult in some ways for GMs and coaches to make decisions that previously they probably would have at least had a good feel for, and now they don't.
Yeah, I don't know about you, Joe, but I have this weird feeling about football in terms of interest and just the intensity of it right now. Because I keep waiting for the other shoe to drop, right? I keep waiting for them to say, you know, it's not working. We're not going to have a season. Or we tried. And so it's hard when you don't get to see anything on the field. You know they're not really doing anything other than walkthroughs. There's no pads.
Yep.
I don't know how are you evaluating? Now, we could probably, of their 53-man roster right now, you could probably name about 45 of them. Would you guess, you know?
Yeah, probably.
Probably. I mean, there's probably some.
But I can't name starters.
No.
Depth chart's more difficult.
Yeah, but how are they? It's probably a little bit of guesswork, Judd.
Yes.
I mean, I don't know.
These people hate guesswork, Chip. Football people hate guesswork.
But are you really going to know, okay, you can evaluate a guy how he, you know, comes out of his breaks in shorts and stuff and work. But are you really going to know, like, how good he is? Is this guy better than this guy or? Or particularly those last 10 where, you know, you're thinking special teams guys. And so I think there's probably an element of guesswork this year that you know, and they, you know, they like to have all the, you know, four preseason games and all these practices, and you tell coaches they want them because they have to make those last. And here's the other thing, Judd. Those spots are going to be important because, hell, you don't know how many guys are going to test positive during the season. You may be relying on a lot of these guys.
Yes.
Your backups at some point. If you're going to play a season, there's a good chance that, you know, you're going to have a lot of positive tests.
Yes.
Or a number of positive tests, and you're going to rely on your backups. And so I'm sure there's, you know, some, I don't know if anxiety is the word, but just discomfort with coaches trying to make decisions when they're really not getting the full look at what, you know, their roster is.
Well, and do you now just sort of by default keep all of your draft picks? Because, you know, you usually signed undrafted guys to sort of compete with the sixth and seventh round guys, right? If you sign
4,000 draft picks, Judd. I mean,
yeah, but I mean, do you just sort of default and say, well, we'll keep all of our draft picks because we thought enough of them to draft them, and we certainly didn't see enough during the course of training camp to cut them based on performance. So, yeah, it's going to be – it's not the top positions that are going to make this difficult because those are the slam dunks. It's the bottom of that roster where you ordinarily are like, well, we drafted this guy seventh, but we signed this guy after the draft. And the guy that we signed after the draft is actually a tick above the seventh round pick, so we'll cut him and then practice squad him possibly. It's those decisions that are going to be damn near impossible to make, and I'm curious to see if they just say, well, we drafted 15 guys because – we like those 15 guys, and we're just going to keep those guys because we didn't get enough opportunity to see the rest of the undrafted guys that we saw.
I would probably look at it from the other angle if I was a coach and say, you know what, I want a guy with a track record with so little off season or no off season and so little training camp. I want a veteran over a rookie just because I know what I'm getting. I'm, you know, there may be some decline or whatever, but I would, if I was a coach, I'd want somebody that I knew has played in the NFL, has a track record versus an unproven guy this year. Yeah. Now the GM might say, let's keep all our draft picks because, you know, we don't know. But if I'm a coach, I'm like, I want the veteran. So it'll be interesting, those conversations, to see how, you know, these rosters shake out. But I think we'll see fewer veterans cut this year, Judd, than we normally do. Cause I would want to have that experience right now.
Yeah. That it's going to be so different, and you're not going to have games. You're not going to really have a lot of practices. And as far as competitions go, trying to wage those is going to be incredibly dicey because it's going to be so short. I mean, you're almost going to have to start like a cornerback. You're almost going to have to, if you are the Vikings, start guys based on what you've seen on previously on film, including college film.
Yeah.
And sort of go from there. And if they fail from day one, they might get replaced. But you know, if Gladney doesn't start now, which, by the way, I do have some trepidation about, but if he doesn't start now, I'd almost be surprised because he's a first round pick. But I guess if he flames out quickly and doesn't play well, he can be replaced at that point, as opposed to him having played throughout training camp and in the exhibition games and saying, okay, he's not prepared to play yet. Those are the type of decisions that at least they can ordinarily make, that this time around they're going to have to almost wait to make, and that's going to make it way more difficult to gauge where players are at.
Yeah, that position, because they have so many, you know, questions, and, you know, I'm sure Zim is going to try to, without the preseason games, you're going to try to, I don't know if you'd scrimmage, so to speak, in NFL training camp, but you got to have some kind of a lot more live periods, right, than you normally do.
Yeah, like NFL, but you can't.
You have, what, maybe 10 minutes of actual live, or maybe 15 of a two-hour practice?
Well, yeah,
You need to have more, I think, this year. If you're not going to have if you're not going to have preseason games, you got to see what these guys do in full 11-on-11 team periods, right?
I would agree.
So, yeah, it's going to be interesting, yeah.
Thank you, sir, Chip. Great stuff. Talk to you next week, okay, buddy?
All right, brother. See you
next. All right. Conduits of Trouble will be back next week. And the best part is now we get to complain about sports again. Talk to you later.